Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Banc of California, Inc. Q2 2014 earnings call. My name is Joyce, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Towards the end of the call, we will have a question-and-answer session. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero and an operator will assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Mr. John Gouvernour, General Counsel. Please proceed.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm John Gouvernour, and I'd like to welcome you to Banc of California's second quarter 2014 earnings conference call. Joining me on the call this morning will be our Chief Executive Officer and President, Stephen Sugarman, our Chief Financial Officer, Ronald Nicolas, and our Chief Risk Officer, Hugh Boyle. In addition, it's my pleasure to welcome and to introduce our new Director of Investor Relations, Tim Sedabres. Today's conference call is being recorded, and a copy of the recording will become available later on the company's website. In addition to the earnings release, we have also furnished presentation materials that will be referred to during this morning's call, and copies of both the earnings announcement and the presentation materials are also included on the company's website. Before I turn it over to Steve, I want to remind everyone that our presentation materials include forward-looking statements that reflect our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those circumstances can change, and those forward-looking statements should be interpreted in that light. You may refer to the specific limitations that apply to reliance on our forward-looking statements included in the presentation materials and in our earnings release. As always, we will provide a Q&A session at the end of the presentation. However, I want to advise everyone that upon the advice of the company's outside litigation counsel, during our presentation today, we will not comment upon or respond to questions during the Q&A period that are subject to or related to the currently ongoing litigation involving the company and certain of its current or former stockholders. This morning's call will focus solely on the company's second quarter performance, and those matters that are the subject of ongoing litigation will be properly addressed in the normal course through the formal judicial process to which those issues have been submitted. With those formalities concluded, I'd like to introduce our President and Chief Executive Officer, Stephen Sugarman, and turn the call over to him. Stephen?
Thank you, John. Welcome, everyone, to Banc of California's earnings call for the quarter ending July 30th, 2014. We continue to make strong progress in building California's bank, the leading full-service bank catering to California's diverse private businesses, entrepreneurs, and homeowners. We have successfully grown our business organically and through strategic acquisitions and will be greater than $5 billion in assets pro forma with the close of the Popular branch acquisition. This is a significant milestone for our company because it represents a threshold level of scale required to drive robust returns on capital. We've been able to achieve our growth while maintaining our disciplined underwriting standards and a strong governance and control environment. As we look forward, we're confident in the trajectory of Banc of California and our ability to achieve our long-term operating targets. I'd now like to turn to our second quarter results, which demonstrate steady progress towards achieving these financial targets. Let me begin by providing a few key highlights from the quarter. First, the company earned $0.27 a share on a fully diluted basis. Second, the company earned a 12% annualized return on tangible common equity. Third, the company funded over $1.4 billion in total loans and is on pace to reach its goal of $5 billion in originations in 2014. Fourth, the company finished the quarter with $4.4 billion of total assets and approximately $5.5 billion of pro forma assets, inclusive of the pending Popular Community Bank acquisition. Fifth, the company's fixed non-interest expenses fell by almost $1 million from the first quarter to the second quarter, notwithstanding our rapid asset growth. Importantly, during the second quarter, we saw strong underlying performance across our business as both our traditional banking operations and our mortgage banking operations had strong revenue performance. We remain enthusiastic about our acquisition of the Popular branch network, which is both strategically and financially compelling. It strengthens our footprint in Los Angeles and Orange County and enhances our ability to serve the fastest growing and, we believe, most attractive market segment in our territory, the Latino segment. We continue to target a fourth quarter closing, and we are working collaboratively with Banco Popular and our regulators to achieve that goal. The return profile of the transaction remains consistent with what we disclosed at announcement, including the guidance that the transaction will be 20% plus accretive to earnings per share in 2015. However, our estimated payback period has increased from less than 1 year to less than 2 years based on the pricing levels of our recent capital raise. I want to take a minute to thank the dozens of local Southern California-based not-for-profit organizations, community groups, and CDFIs who submitted to us and the OCC letters of support for our transaction with Popular. We believe that the 35 letters of support submitted is the greatest outpouring of support from the local communities that we are aware of for a bank transaction like ours. This is a testament to our 73-year relationship serving Southern California's diverse communities and the great work of our community development officer, Gary Dunn. I'd also like to provide an update on some of our key strategic initiatives. As discussed last quarter, we've largely completed our technology initiative and platform initiative. Building a stronger, more robust technology platform is already starting to pay dividends with respect to operating costs. We expect those savings within our technology division alone to grow to a run rate of over $4 million in 2015. This is primarily from reductions in third-party vendor and systems contracts. Our investments in technology are able to provide us the integrated data and analytics that are crucial to robust enterprise risk management and governance. It will also enable us to continue to improve and optimize the efficiency and profitability of our business. In addition to building out our technology infrastructure, we're beginning to see strong results from the new origination teams we hired over the past 9 months. Each of our multifamily lending, financial institutions, renovation, and small business lending teams are exceeding expectations and should see their business and production continue to ramp up over the residual of the year. Personally, I want to thank Tom Sinski, Fran Turner, Heather Inderson, and Jim Frazier for their decision as leaders of these groups to join us at Bank of California. They're each incredibly respected and talented bankers who we're proud to have on board, and their early returns for the company have been very positive. It is a strong endorsement of our vision of building California's bank to be associated with them. Our strategic initiatives, coupled with the close of the Popular transaction, will generate meaningful shareholder value. We've worked carefully to align management and employees' interests with those of shareholders, and we remain committed to achieving our long-term operating targets, including an over 1% return on assets and 15% return on tangible common equity. With that, I'll now turn it over to our CFO, Ron Nicolas, to provide a more detailed update with regard to today's earnings report.
Thanks, Steve, and good morning, everyone. As customary, I will be directing my comments to the financial statements included with the release provided earlier this morning, along with our supplemental presentation, focusing primarily on the comparison to the first quarter of 2014, starting with the highlights for the second quarter on slide two. As Steve mentioned, today we report a net income of $8.1 million and net income to common shareholders of $7.2 million, or 27 cents per diluted share, with an average return on tangible common equity of 12%. The quarter was punctuated by strong loan growth, improved results from our mortgage banking operations, lower operating expense, excluding our volume-related costs. We experienced strong loan growth during the quarter, with total loans increasing by $301 million, or 9% for the first quarter. As Steve mentioned, recent additions to our lending teams are gaining traction and quickly ramping up toward full production capabilities. In addition, we experienced solid deposit growth as well during the second quarter, which increased by $238 million, or 8%, compared to the prior quarter. Our net interest income increased just over 1% from the first quarter, and our consolidated net interest margin finished the quarter at 3.7%. Our non-interest income grew by $10.1 million compared to the first quarter and was largely driven by the strength in mortgage banking. The second quarter marked an important turning point for our mortgage banking operations as the completed cost efficiency work is beginning to bear fruit. Keep in mind, these cost reductions were implemented without compromising origination growth. Second quarter mortgage banking originations experienced nearly a 40% increase compared to the first quarter, resulting in a positive net contribution to earnings this quarter. Lastly, with respect to our highlights, our capital ratios improved during the second quarter due to our May capital raise, with our Tier 1 risk-based capital ratio of 14.1% at June 30th. Our capital ratios for the bank subsidiary remain strong and well in excess of regulatory guidelines. Our TCE ratio also improved during the quarter to 7.3% from 5.1% at the end of the first quarter as a result of the offering. Turning now to slide three and taking a closer look at the income statement for the second quarter, as noted, we reported net income of $8.1 million and 27 cents per diluted share on approximately 26 million average diluted shares. That compares favorably to the net loss to common shareholders of $153,000 for the first quarter of 2014. Profitability increased was driven principally by higher revenues of $71 million before loan loss provision for the second quarter, an increase of over $10 million from the $60 million reported in the first quarter. Net interest income, highlighted on slide four, was $35.6 million for the second quarter, an increase of over 1% from the first quarter, largely due to higher loan balances during the quarter. Our consolidated net interest margin for the second quarter was 3.7%, and we expect our NIM to remain at or just below the lower end of our target net interest margin range of 3.75% to 4% during the quarter and return to its target range upon the closing of the Popular transaction. Our cost of interest-bearing liabilities declined by 3 basis points from the first quarter to 1.02% on a consolidated basis. Average deposit costs were down 3 basis points from the first quarter to 0.74% as we work to reprice and actively manage down our cost of funds. Taking a closer look at non-interest income for the quarter, we reported $35.4 million, an increase of $10 million compared to the first quarter. The primary driver of the increase, as mentioned, was higher mortgage banking revenues, both higher origination fees driven by the higher volumes and higher gains on sale achieved on the sale of our loans. Our gain on sale rate widened to 3.25% for the second quarter from 2.96% in the first quarter. Total SFR mortgage originations for the quarter were $1.1 billion, up from $870 million in the prior quarter, with our agency and conforming mortgage banking operations originating $715 million and selling $651 million for the quarter. The second quarter production of non-conforming jumbo originations was $378 million, with sales of $224 million and total fees and gains delivering over $4 million in non-interest revenue. You will recall we sold $97 million of jumbo loans during the first quarter and indicated we would be selling more here in the second quarter. We intend to continue to originate and sell jumbo mortgage loans to manage both portfolio risk and economic returns. In addition, during the second quarter, we sold mortgage servicing rights with an unpaid principal balance of approximately $400 million, achieving approximately a 1% gain. On slide six, taking a closer look at non-interest expense, we continue to be diligent in managing our non-interest expense. The second quarter non-interest expense totaled just over $60 million, up $2.5 million from the first quarter, primarily as a result of higher loan-related origination expense. This quarter, we saw the benefits of our efficiency plans within the mortgage banking area as fixed expenses were lower than the prior quarter, while variable volume-related expenses increased due to the higher production volumes. The total volume-related expenses for the second quarter totaled $12 million compared to $9 million in the first quarter. Fixed expenses decreased compared to the prior quarter, including non-recurring charges, such as those related to our pending acquisition of Banco Popular, of approximately $1 million. Overall, the company headcount was flat at just over 1,200 employees compared to the first quarter, and our count in the residential business lending area, which includes mortgage banking, saw a decline of 39 employees during the quarter that was offset by an increase of 42 employees in both the bank and TPG combined. TPG added employees during the quarter, as well as retail banking, related to our new branch locations, and the remainder was spread across the company. For the quarter, our tax expense was $253,000 on $8.4 million of pre-tax income for an effective rate of approximately 3%. The company's statutory rate was reduced through the utilization of its deferred tax assets by virtue of reversing out a portion of the valuation allowance. As we indicated last quarter, while it is impossible to accurately predict the future utilization of the company's DTA, to the extent we continue to have positive earnings, the company's tax rate will be significantly reduced by the realization of its DTA or until the valuation allowance is fully reversed. Turning now to the balance sheet on slide seven, the company finished at $4.4 billion in assets compared to $4 billion in assets at the end of the first quarter. This increase came primarily as a result of loan growth and, to a lesser extent, an increase in our securities portfolio associated with the second quarter capital raise. Also related to the capital raise, our notes payable increased by $14 million to $96 million as a portion of the TEUs were classified as debt. In addition, equity increased to $439 million, which includes both the equity portion of the TEUs and the common raise completed during the second quarter. Total organic growth, outlined on slide eight, added $301 million of net loan balances during the quarter as total loans increased to $3.7 billion, representing a quarter-over-quarter growth rate of almost 9%. As highlighted in the release, our commercial loan portfolio grew to 48% of total loans held for investment, up from 46%, with C&I and multifamily both contributing significantly to the increase. Loans held for investment increased by $205 million, or 7% from the first quarter, and was comprised of broad-based growth across various portfolios outlined on the chart on slide eight. Commercial lending, C&I, SBA, and leases grew by $81 million during the quarter, and multifamily business balances increased by $79 million from the first quarter as we begin to see production from our new multifamily lending team. In addition, we transferred to HFI approximately $80 million of jumbo SFR previously classified as HFS. Our loans held for sale increased by $95 million during the quarter to $1.1 billion and is comprised of approximately 80% of non-conforming jumbo loans and 20% of agency and conforming. Both increased from the previous quarter as a result of higher originations, partially offset by higher loan sales. We anticipate selling more jumbo loans through the balance of the year to approximate the level of originations. Continued growth from our commercial and multifamily portfolios, coupled with lower levels of loans held for sale over time and the pending acquisition of our Banco Popular loan portfolio, will accelerate the rebalancing of the loan portfolio to a higher concentration of commercial loans. As mentioned earlier, the securities portfolio increased by $125 million during the quarter, primarily as a result of investing the capital raised during the quarter. Our securities purchases for the quarter were primarily of shorter duration, such as agency CMOs, in anticipation of our acquisition. On the liability side, as highlighted on slide 9, deposits grew by $238 million overall from the prior quarter, with money market accounts, interest-bearing checking, and CDs primarily providing the increase. Money market deposits were up $116 million from the prior quarter, and interest-bearing checking balances also increased by $44 million. In addition, we added $100 million of brokered CDs to help fund the increase in our loans held for sale originations during the quarter. Excluding the held for sale portfolio, our loan-to-deposit ratio was 75%. The company continues to successfully grow its retail base to fund loan growth, as well as utilize additional sources of liquidity to fund loan production ahead of loan sales and balance its short-term liquidity needs. To that end, during the second quarter, we opened a new branch location in Fullerton as part of our branch deposits franchise expansion strategy. We intend to open two additional locations in the back half of the year in Santa Barbara and Rancho Santa Fe. Slide 10 highlights our capital position as equity increased during the second quarter to $439 million as a result of the May capital raise, while total shares outstanding increased to 27.6 million versus 20.3 during the first quarter. Our tangible book value increased to $11.45 per share from $9.94 as of March 31st. When adjusting for the TEU conversion, tangible book value per share is $9.66. Our TCE ratio improved to 7.3%, up from 5.1 during the first quarter, and both the bank and the company remain well capitalized at the end of the quarter for each of the key risk-based and leverage ratios. With that, I'll now turn it over to Hugh Boyle to highlight our asset quality.
Thank you, Ron. Total gross held for investment loans grew by $205 million, reflecting strong single-digit growth for Q2 2014. That growth occurred across all business channels, with the exception of commercial real estate, which experienced a small 4% decline, largely due to maturities and scheduled payoffs. Consistent with one of the central themes of our strategic plan, which is to diversify our loan portfolio and lower our reliance on single-family mortgages, we are seeing strong loan origination growth, particularly in our multifamily, C&I private banking, and leasing sectors, with quarterly growth rates of 51%, 23%, and 19%, respectively. As a result of our diversification initiatives, single-family residential mortgages have fallen to 47% of total HFI loans as of June 30, 2014, down from 53% of total HFI loans at December of 2013 and 62% of HFI loans as of June, 1 year prior. We continue to work actively to ensure the smooth integration of approximately $1.1 billion in California-based loans and deposits from Popular Community Bank. We have a dedicated transition team and a comprehensive conversion plan with detailed work streams and tasks led by all the key subject matter expert senior executives across the bank. Bank of California and Popular Community Bank are engaged in continuous dialogue, and we are making substantial strides daily. We remain on track for our early fourth quarter close. And with full integration of this portfolio, it will further accelerate the diversification of our loan portfolio. On slide 11, you can see our asset quality metrics. Total delinquent loans increased by $21 million quarter over quarter and by $5.5 million from December 2013. The bulk of our increased delinquent loans was attributable to first lien single-family residential mortgages, with a portion attributable to our season loan pools. Management regularly reviews our season loan portfolios and culls delinquent loans as appropriate, and we will continue to do so. Non-performing loans grew by $9.2 million quarter over quarter to $41.6 million. The quarterly increase was primarily attributable to three single-family residential loans. The largest of the SFR, or single-family residential loans, which represents the bulk of this increase, is well secured with a conservative loan-to-value. The borrower, subsequent to quarter end, has listed the property for sale and has brought the loan current. We believe that there is little inherent loss associated with this exposure. Of the two remaining loans, we believe that one will be brought current shortly and the other will pay off in full within 30 days. Gross charge-offs rose slightly quarter over quarter to $383,000 for Q2. Recoveries improved quarter over quarter, with total recoveries equaling $641,000 for the quarter. On a net charge-off basis, we saw improvement quarter over quarter, with both Q1 and Q2 showing net recoveries. REO, while increasing slightly from $150,000 in Q1 to $600,000 in Q2, remained negligible. And as a result, non-performing assets to total assets increased from 81 basis points in Q1 to 96 basis points in Q2. For the quarter, the company provisioned $2.1 million for loan and lease losses. Overall, our ALL, or allowance for loan and lease losses, was higher by $2.6 million, reaching $22.6 million when compared to the first quarter. Our ALL to gross loans held for investment increased from 83 basis points in Q1 to 87 basis points in Q2. And our ALL to total attributable loans, and we define, again, attributable loans as non-PCI and non-bank acquired, i.e. FAS 91 or SOP 03 loans, and excluding held for sale loans, that ALL to attributable loans ratio remained flat and strong from Q1 to Q2 at 1.18%. With that, I'll turn it back over to our CEO, Stephen Sugarman.
Thanks, Hugh, and thanks, Ron. This completes our prepared remarks today. With that, operator, we'd open up for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1, followed by the pound key. Our first question comes from the line of Brett Rabatin. Please proceed.
The gain on sale margin in the quarter moving up, was that a function of the increased jumbo loan sales? And then just maybe give us some additional color on kind of how you see the back half of the year shaping up. Most people are talking about, the summer is still going to be robust, but then a decline seasonally in the fourth quarter. Any thoughts around that and what you've done as it relates to you've obviously changed personnel in that division?
Yeah, good morning, Brett. This is Ron. The gain on sale
the widening of the gain on sale was somewhat a function of obviously our disciplined approach to our pricing. And, you know, during the quarter, we saw the 10-year on average move down about 16 basis points from the first quarter. That has a tendency, all else being equal, that'll open up your spread income and your margins. And we saw that as we held the line pretty well with respect to our agency and conforming business. And I might add, you know, we originated up from about 60-40 purchase to refi. That increased to about 66% purchase. And purchase has a little bit better pricing and stickier discipline around the pricing. So I think the advent or the growth on the purchase versus the refi also added to the widening in the margin.
And Brett, this is Steve. Just to comment on the second part of your question around the latter half of the year, in an environment where rates and the economy stay steady here, we feel very confident about the improving financial results that our platform is able to generate. One of the primary factors just being that we start the third quarter with much more earning asset footings than the second quarter, and so the benefits of the scale are really starting to take hold. That being said, the fourth quarter will be marked by the acquisition we expect of the Popular Community Bank branches. That will be accompanied with some one-time charges and restructuring charges that in aggregate we've previously provided guidance. We expect to be up to $10 million. Additionally, in the third quarter, given that the Popular acquisition is a branch acquisition, some of the shared services staff, and in particular in key areas such as BSA and Central Ops, will be staffed up in advance of the close of the Popular transaction, and therefore we would expect to see the addition of some headcount during the third quarter that really is linked to that acquisition. And so those are some of the considerations as we look forward to the rest of the year. Our business model is increasingly diversified between businesses that perform well in moderate to decreasing interest rate environments and businesses that would be advantaged by increasing rates. So there are some natural hedges within our business, but clearly one of the more volatile parts of our business continues to be the mortgage banking piece. So that would be a part that, you know, looking forward is a source of volatility or potential volatility. However, the business is being run and has been post the changes we've made over the last couple quarters leanly. We're hitting our metrics of less than 2% fixed cost to origination for that business, and we're optimistic about the operations within that business, and also the declining percentage of total revenue that comes from that business, which we expect as we move forward to provide a less volatile earnings path as the Popular deal closes and we reach kind of our target assets and business model.
Okay, that's helpful. And then I guess the other thing I wanted to talk about was just given the growth you had this quarter, you know, pro forma, you were talking about a 6% plus TCE ratio post the branch deal, and just with the growth this quarter, I mean, it looks to me like you'll be under 6 unless you make some changes prior to that, assuming you do have some growth in the third quarter. Can you comment on maybe an update on the capital outlook and just what you'll be doing to kind of bolster ratios either pre or post the transaction closing?
Sure, and I just want to remind you and the group that we remain outstanding the private placement that was previously announced led by Oaktree. That should close immediately preceding the capital raise. So I just caution you to make sure you look at that and the profitability with your analysis. That being said, I would suggest that there are actions that we continue to take in advance of the Popular closing to make sure that the diversification and the composition of our portfolio is appropriate from different concentration risks perspectives. And, you know, you start seeing impacts of things like that in parts of our financials, and I'd expect, including in the third quarter, including things like the net interest margin, where you'll see declines in commercial real estate, we'd expect to continue to make room for the Popular assets. And on a pro forma basis, it may be helpful to look not only at the capital with that private placement that's still yet to close, but also at our portfolio and the net interest margin pro forma for the close of the Popular transaction, which we expect to be right back within our target range.
Okay, great. I have some more questions, but I'll step back in the queue. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Kevin Reynolds, Wunderlich Securities. Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning, Steve. Hello?
Good morning.
So quick question. I think Brett hit a lot of the questions I was going to ask, but two others that I wanted to put out in front of you. One is just when we think of seasonality in the mortgage origination piece by itself, how do you feel about, you know, this quarter's level versus, say, going back to Q1? Was Q1 a real seasonal quarter, or was there, you know, I know in the broader economy there's been a lot of talk about weather impacting the Q1 production levels just in virtually every business. Would you say that's a level that is real for your business, or do you think that it was maybe depressed in Q1? And if we do follow typical seasonal patterns as we get into 2015, do you think it could be a little bit higher than that or not? And then I've got a question about HFI loan growth after that.
Sure. With regard to the mortgage banking business, we view it as a seasonal business. We view the fourth quarter and the first quarter as seasonally weak quarters, with the second and third quarters more strong. And so as we think about our originations over the course of many cycles, we'd expect the summer months to be stronger than the winter months. That being said, we've made systematic changes and improvements to both the mortgage business and its operational and cost metrics, but also we've now had about a year to identify and hire kind of the quality originators and team members that we need. And so I wouldn't attribute the entire difference in volumes to seasonality. So I think that as we look forward, you'll continue to see a seasonal effect. But, you know, but the first quarter and fourth quarter of last year probably aren't the right baseline. It's probably a seasonal effect off of the current production levels.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question I had on on the organic loan growth you had in the quarter looks pretty strong, and it looks like heavily in the commercial space. Can you characterize or give us a sort of the rate profile and duration profile of what you were putting on during the quarter? And I guess what I'm trying to get to is there the margin came in a good bit during the quarter. Is there some are we giving up a little bit of yield now but maintaining flexibility as we go forward when the Fed ultimately starts to raise someday in the future? Or is there
I think I'd agree with your assessment. Our originations and the yields for a couple of reasons. One's market related, but also the deployment of some of our new capital to deploy it into working assets and things in advance of our acquisition makes it the right decision as well. But new origination yields are tight. I think they're tight across the industry. That certainly applies for us. That being said, you know, one of the decisions that could be made in reaction to that is just lengthening durations and things like that. That has not been our approach. So our durations continue to be pretty short as well, where we're focused mostly in a lot of those commercial loan categories on things that are 3 years or less as far as originations. So that probably exacerbates for this quarter and next quarter kind of some of the NIM pressure, because we're not looking to take, you know, make up for the rates with extra duration risk. And in fact, it fits well with our model to have our portfolio get into shape for the closing of the Popular transaction, which pro forma for those assets brings our NIM right squarely within our target area.
Okay, thanks a lot, and congratulations on a good quarter.
Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Liesch, Sandler O'Neill & Partners. Please proceed.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Andrew.
Curious, just looking at the loan growth for this quarter, was any of this from loan purchases or participations?
I'll let Ron answer, but I don't think that we had any loan purchases or participations in the quarter. Is that right, Ron?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Andrew. The growth was all organic, originated directly by the bank.
Great.
The only thing that technically in our disclosures might show up as loan purchases are things like our correspondent business, where loans fund in other people's names for our mortgage banking business, but nothing that's not kind of ordinary course.
Right. Okay. And then of the 27 cents that you reported this quarter, it sounds like the mortgage banking business was small or at least turned profitable. I'm curious, like, what percentage or how many cents of the 27 cents was from mortgage banking?
Yeah. What I can tell you is that when you look across our business, the mortgage banking was a meaningful impact as it turned from negative to positive, but the preponderance of the income came from non-mortgage banking businesses. So I don't think we've put out the exact percentage, but I can tell you that the preponderance was not mortgage banking.
Okay. And then just one last question, just looking at the margin, I'm kind of struggling to get back to your 3.75 to 4% margin, just based on where the loan portfolio yield came in. And I mean, I know there's going to be some reduction in funding costs going forward, and maybe a little bit better earning asset mix as you take some of these funds and put them into the Popular deal. But I'm just curious, like, how much accretion from the Popular income is going to be benefiting the margin? Is that a lot of it? Or maybe is it just like did the Popular portfolio have a higher yield? Like, I just can't remember.
Yeah, and just for clarity on my prior comments, that was not inclusive of accretable yield or fair market accounting. That was just taking the loan yield and the deposit yield as it existed as of the end of the second quarter as we understand it. So the cost of deposits, we'd expect our cost of deposits to be lowered pro forma for the transaction, and we'd expect our overall cost of our yield on loans to be higher.
Okay. Do you remember what the yield on that portfolio was in the second quarter?
On the Popular one?
Yeah.
That was a high four yield on the loan portfolio.
Great. Thank you. I'll step back.
The next question comes from the line of Gary Tanner, D.A. Davidson. Please proceed.
I had a couple of questions. One, just on the DTA, Ron, can you just update the remaining amount of recoverable DTA?
We ended up reversing out about $2.5 million. There's a lot of temporary timing differences, not the least of which, of course, is bad debt losses versus versus provisioning and that, and it's a little bit complicated, but effectively our tax income was higher than our book income as a result, and we ended up reversing out roughly about $2.5 million of our valuation allowance.
The valuation allowance, I think, was $17 million at the end of the first quarter, so roughly $14.5 remaining now?
Yeah, we have roughly around $14 million remaining with the valuation allowance.
Okay. And then on the $4 million or so of non-interest revenue that you attributed to the jumbo production sales, is all that in the other income category, or is any of that in the mortgage line?
No, it's in the other. On the slide, I think it would be categorized in that $9 million bucket.
Okay, and the gain on the MSR sale, is that in the other category as well?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right, thanks very much.
Welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Jack Shamara, KBW. Please proceed.
As I'm looking over, Ron, I have a question for you, just trying to understand the accounting behind the TEUs in the quarter and understanding that they closed in May, so it makes things just a little bit more difficult with averages and whatnot. What portion of the TEUs added to the dilution impact between your average outstanding shares and then your average diluted shares?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right, Jackie. It is complicated, but let me see if I can summarize it for you. So approximately 80% of the raise was categorized as paid-in surplus, and the remaining 20%, roughly about $14 million, was categorized as debt, and that would be based on effectively the fair market value of the instruments that split between the allocation between the two. As far as the EPS calculation on the basic categorization for EPS, we included the minimum amount of shares as of 6/30 day weighted. So approximately, I think it came out to about 30-some-odd days on the day waiting. And then on and the reason they were categorized in basic is because they are considered to be mandatory forward purchase contracts. So they were included in the basic. Any other additional shares based upon the stock price as of 6/30 versus the conversion rate, any other additional shares would be treated under the diluted. So, in effect, for this particular quarter, you know, I don't have the percentage off the top of my head here, but I would suggest to you that 95% of the TEUs were included in the basic calculation, and the remaining were included in the diluted.
Okay. So then does it convert, and I apologize because my understanding of these is not great. So as I look at it then, does it essentially remove any debt payment and consider it as an as-converted basis, and so that's how you're calculating the EPS, so it has no impact on anything that's margin-related because of the conversion assumption, and it all hits EPS in the denominator?
For all intents and purposes, that is true. There's a small debt component to it. But it's not material in the grand scheme of things. And you'll see, in our queue, there'll be further disclosure, which will probably give you a little bit more clarity. And then I would also point back to the prospectus, which also provides additional, amplification of the TEUs.
Okay. And is the treatment of them in this quarter, is that somewhat indicative of how we can expect them to be treated in future quarters as well?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Okay. And then I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly in your prepared remarks. It was about $1 million in expenses in the quarter that was related to BPOP?
Yes, in terms of non-recurring charges, yeah, roughly about the majority were related to BPOP.
Okay. I think the rest of my questions have been answered. If I missed anything, I'll hop back in the queue after everyone else goes again. Thank you.
Terrific. You're welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Brett Villame, FIG Partners. Please proceed.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hi. I just wanted to know if how did the loan yield this quarter that you reported for two quarters, do you have an estimate of what that the amount of accretable yield contributed to that?
You know, Brett, I don't have that off the top of my head here, but it wasn't inconsistent with prior quarters.
Okay. And then I wanted to ask on the you've mentioned a excluding held for sale loans, a loan to deposit ratio of approximately 75%, but then commented that you may continue to originate jumbo and sell jumbo loans according to how much you originate. And is it reasonable to expect that, you know, excluding the on a pro forma basis, that you're going to see a similar loan to deposit ratio, you know, for the next couple quarters?
I think that's reasonable. The biggest variables on that are potential timing factors relating to end of quarters for loan sales. Some of these are packaged loan sales, especially in the single family where you do a bulk sale. And so there could always be timing issues about whether it closes one week or another. But generally speaking, over time, that's a reasonable expectation.
Okay, well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
We have a follow-up question from Brett Rabatin, Stern AG. Please proceed.
Hi, I just want to follow up on the NPAs you mentioned, and it sounded like, you know, it was three mortgages, and one of them was kind of a lot bigger than the others. Is this a function of some purchased loans, the TPG-related stuff, and can you sort of comment on if you're seeing delinquencies in any other pieces of that portfolio?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Brett. No, these are primarily the green loans that we inherited back in 2010 when the bank was recapitalized. Some of those loans had larger balances, but they tended to have pretty attractive LTVs. Within our Qs and our most recent K, we disclosed kind of the LTV tables of those loans. But the non-performers that Hugh referenced were primarily in those legacy green loans that have been with us for multiple, you know, over 4 or 5 years.
Okay. And then I guess the other thing, I know you're not going to comment specifically on the litigation stuff, but, you know, as we're thinking about expenses, should we be thinking about adding anything in for that? And maybe if you could just let us know, like, how we're going, like, what's the next step? What as investors, what should they expect to see the next news from that situation?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we can add much more for you. We'll be sure to make announcements in 8K, anything that's material that comes along. Unfortunately, part of that has an expense associated with it, but we don't have any specific guidance on levels at this time.
Okay, fair enough. And then the last thing I was just curious around was, you added the multifamily team, and I guess I'm just curious to hear any color on what you guys did in the multifamily book, and then just how you view that competitive environment. And then just lastly, you know, the really strong growth you had organically in 2Q, you know, if there was a lot of pent-up stuff that they were bringing over in terms of whether it's C&I or multifamily or SBA, or if, you know, the pipeline suggests, you know, that type of growth is potentially the same in the back half.
Thanks for the question. What we have seen or expect to see is that over the course of the second quarter, that that origination volume increased and kind of a ramp-up period. So, and that's continued into the third quarter. And so what we see is higher total originations quarter over quarter to the extent that the market stays similar and production stays at current levels. So the second quarter within multifamily would probably suffered from some lower than run rate originations due to a ramp phase. As far as some of the other teams that I mentioned, you know, the multifamily team was hired first and is farthest along in their path. Last quarter we mentioned that we had hired some other teams, one being our financial institutions group, and we expected some initial loans and deposits in the second quarter. We've seen that, and we have some deposits on the books from that from that group, but that's still primarily in a ramp phase through the second half of the year. Also, our SBA team, while we were already in the SBA business as a preferred lender, this team's continued to manage those relationships, but the preponderance of ramp from that group, according to our expectations and business plan, is still future-looking. And the same goes for the renovation team, that we had a hope to close on our first kind of FHA 203K loans when we last had a conference call. We've now done that, so we have gotten into that business, but the ramp phase is far from complete. So the multifamily is probably farthest along.
Okay. Thanks for the additional caller.
We have a follow-up question from Jackie Chimera, KBW. Please proceed.
Hi. Thanks for taking my questions again. Ron, were there any conversions on the TEUs in the quarter? If I take the tangible book value that you gave of the 966 and back into the impact of those, I'm getting around $5.1 million instead of the $6.1 million. Am I calculating that properly?
Yeah, there were a small number of conversions in the first quarter. They all, when that happens, convert at the kind of most favorable conversion factor for the company. And the Q will lay out the specifics of the details.
Okay, thanks, Steve. That's helpful. And did I understand you correctly when you were talking about $4 million of cost saves that are still available from non-interest expense? Those are still yet to come. They haven't hit already in your run rate from the LPO closures and everything else, right?
Yeah, and just to be clear, that was savings that we expect out of the technology group. That wasn't a statement about across the bank. But yeah, those are things that began getting implemented a little bit in the second quarter, but the guidance I gave was for a full 2015 run rate on those expenses.
Okay. And then just lastly, any reason in particular why after two quarters of moving loans from held to investment from held for investment into held for sale, we did the reverse switch this quarter?
Well, look, we had some significant activity this quarter, and as management looked at the right thing for the company, one of the things that we found was with the additional capital and our desire to deploy it, and with the onboarding or the expectation of onboarding the Banco Popular loans that dramatically kind of bring our residential exposure into line, we felt that holding these $80 million of loans was a more profitable step that we were now able to take instead of their sale. We wouldn't expect a lot of that type of transaction, but you know, when management sat down following this recent capital raise and acquisition announcement, there are some steps that I referred to earlier about pruning and preparing a portfolio for an inevitable closing of a branch acquisition.
Okay.
Just to add to that, we're refining our
held for investment and the profile of the loans on the jumbo of which we want to sell and those that we want to hold for investment. So that also played into the analysis.
Okay. So it sounds like basically overall with everything that's going on, once the Popular deal closes and the technology cost saves start to become infiltrated and you're ironing out portfolios, absent any further large announcements, we should be by 1Q15 at a pretty good run rate on everything.
We believe that the company, subject to, stable or market conditions consistent with today's conditions, is in a very strong position to see the financial metrics that we target come into materialize during the course of 2015.
Okay, great. Thank you both very much for all the color on the call and the added press release. It's much appreciated.
Welcome.
The next call comes from the line of Don Worthington, Raymond James. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Don.
Morning, Don.
Was looking at the non-interest-bearing deposit balance, which was down linked quarter. Was that just seasonal issues, or was there a large withdrawal? Any color on that?
I think there were several factors. I don't know that there was a predominant shift, but we have seen some of our deposits within some of the groups that we had acquired shift into different deposit products and things like that, where they might go from a DDA to a business checking and things of that nature. It's something that we keep an eye on, but at this point we're not concerned about it, as we think that there's pretty good progress that we're making as far as bringing our overall cost of deposits down. And then we also think that we're making some progress on, in particular, focusing on ramping up some of our DDA deposits over the back half of the year. But, it's a number that we're watching closely. It's something that is important. And as of now, we don't see any kind of single kind of cause of it.
Okay, thanks. And then any update on the contribution from the Palisades Group in terms of revenue and whether those assets under advisement there are continuing to grow?
Yeah, Palisades Group continues to perform very strongly. Their revenues increased in the second quarter by over $1 million. They added a very strong and well-respected clients to their ranks, and they continue to perform in a way that makes us proud. As we look forward, the assets that they manage have now been on their books in large part for a year or a year and a half. It's been a positive time in the market from a home price appreciation perspective and from a credit perspective. So, our hope would be that as the Palisades Group business model continues to mature, that you could also see some performance fees materialize.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining the call. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking with you after the third quarter.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.